do you think when you look down upon an anthill? Do you see ants as simple pests, picnic invaders that can ruin a summer's day of fun? Or perhaps you don't consider them at all? Ants are simply ants and don't require consideration. What would be the thoughts of a civilization far removed from our own? One that has perhaps unraveled the mysteries of interstellar travel. What would be their thoughts towards humans? Hundreds of people have claimed to have been abducted by intelligent creatures from beyond our own solar system, taken for experiments or given messages and portents for them to relay to their fellow humans. What about those humans who never came back? Few of the cases involving complete disappearances where UFOs were present are well documented or have reliable supporting evidence. One of these cases happened on the southern tip of Australia in 1978. This case file joined the gruesome twosome of Braden and Dan as they take to the skies of Down Under, exploring the Valentich disappearance. But be forewarned, if you came to listen for highly accurate reenactments and flawless Australian accents, you came to the wrong neighborhood. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing, Case File 72, Disappearances. I'm Braden.
I'm Dan.
Running a skeleton crew this week.
That's true.
Andrew was a maybe. He bailed. Zell is on his way up to northern British Columbia, where he's playing Grizz Fest, so he's... It's a little bit of a jaunt for him. I think it's about a 10-hour drive. I wasn't sure if he's going up tonight or is he leaving first thing in the morning. But either way, he's too busy for the podcast.
He's living the dream. Rockstar lifestyle.
Living the dream. He's probably in a van, a sweaty van, with his sweaty bandmates, having a gay old time. I'm actually heading there too. I'll see him tomorrow. So we'll... I'll send some Instagram. Make sure to follow us on social media. I'll be posting. I'll get a couple photos of him. I wonder if he'll... I told him to wear an alien theorizing shirt on stage.
Did you say he was going to do it?
I can't remember. I'll text him after.
Okay.
But yeah, always... you got any other news before we get going?
Nothing that fits in here now. We're good.
Nothing this.
I think it's going to be pretty, it's going to be quick and dirty.
Oh yeah. It's as soon as it's just me and Dan, it's, you know, like we let's
buckle up everybody. It's going to be rough.
Buckle up. Yeah. The rest, everyone else, dead weight. They drag us down.
Yes.
Right. We're running like Usain Bolt now, like lean and mean, baby.
Aerodynamic. And yeah, we're ready to go. We've cut all the, we've sanded down all the edges. Yeah. We're about to break the sound barrier.
Yeah. Any second now. Blast into the stratosphere. Unbelievable. Light speed. Space news! I got a bunch of space news. Not really. A couple.
I think this might be the first time we're getting space news ahead of time, since we'll be putting this out at the correct time.
As long as Zell doesn't fuck this up.
Instead of auroras that are like a week old.
Yeah. So if you're listening to this, chances are it's early August, which means you still have time. You still have time. The Perseid meteor shower is about to happen.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best meteor showers in history.
And it happens every year around this time. This year, the nights of August 11th and 12th, so between 11th and 12th, and 12th and 13th. Spectators should see about 60 to 70 meteors per hour.
That's crazy.
But in outburst years, such as in 2016, rates can be between 150 to 200.
Oh, is that like 60 meteors per hour?
Per hour.
That's like 60 wishes per hour.
Yeah, get out there.
Make a list. Get out there.
Yeah.
We should see a lot more people riding T-Rexes and like having golden toilets and stuff. So
yeah,
I anticipate that this is what's going to happen.
I always wish for attainable wishes. I'm like, you know what? Like, I hope my Amazon,
I hope I keep breathing this week for the next 4 hours.
Yeah. I hope I see another meteor.
I hope I eat this sandwich that I'm holding in my hand.
I'm trying to. Earth passes through the path of comet Swift Tuttle from July 17th to August 24th. The Earth passes through the densest, dustiest area occurring on August 12th. So that means, like, if you go outside right now and you look in the night, chances are you'll see some meteors. And this is from the path of comet Swift Tuttle. But it's obviously going to peak around August 12th. So guys, get out there, film it, go enjoy it. This is the first time Space News is giving you something that you can plan to go see. If you're in a big city area, take a drive, go find a dark area. It's going to be worth it. I know I'm going to head out of town a little bit here and, take a peek. So it's going to be really exciting. So Amazon was, like pumping their facial recognition software and stuff.
Right.
I can't remember what the cost was, like millions of dollars on their facial recognition technology. And I guess it had kind of made the news because Trump was like saying that he wants more facial recognition software and stuff.
Right.
Basically, an independent researcher did a test of Amazon's facial recognition software, and it failed miserably. So if they ever do these kill bots, chances are
you will
be killed. You'll be, or you're dead because it'll think you're someone else. It failed miserably. It falsely matched 28 members of Congress to mugshots. Basically, it was terrible.
This is space news? What's happening here?
Well, it's like tech news, right? Oh, I always go space and tech.
Oh, okay.
But basically, it people of color, it didn't really work on people of color. So if you aren't happy with the racism already around in the world, wait till you experience racism, racist AI, because it's coming for you.
That'll be the worst.
Other than that, for space weather, if we've got any auroras, it's pretty slow in the aurora category. It's been quite a few days. It's been 121 days, spotless days. So we're getting up there now to one of the slowest years in the last decade. The slowest year ever was 2008 with 268 spotless Sundays. So this has been a bad year so far for auroras.
Climate change.
Yeah, exactly. anyways, other than that, there isn't, I don't have much else for space news. Dan, what do you got?
I got, it looks like NASA's planning for SpaceX and Boeing to start putting up their commercial rockets. I think they're going to start crewing them. They said about April 2019. They said this November they're going to launch their automated rockets up there that'll launch into the lower Earth orbit, dock with the International Space Station. And if everything goes according to plan, they'll be having their crews flying on those Falcon 9s back and forth.
It's awesome.
That'd be pretty neat. And that's one step closer to commercial spaceflight.
Cannot wait.
It's coming quick.
I wonder if in my lifetime it'll be affordable for me to go into space.
We'll see.
What? Well, I know I'll see because I'm going to live my life. But what I was asking is it going to be?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't think it will become affordable for normal people until they build like a space elevator or something. I think that would be the most affordable way the most cost-effective way for people to go up into space.
Space elevators, like, that's a thing.
It is a thing. Yeah. And it's plausible.
Yeah.
Anyways, okay, let's fire up the X3 here. I'm going to fire it up right now.
UFOs.
This falls under UFOs. Carlos Pecanetti. Carlos Pecanetti and colleague Fernando Jose Villegas. Okay, oh, hold on. I gotta read this here. I'm starting to think that this may have, because we got a new machine, it may have spit out one that the old machine. No, I'm gonna read it. I don't know this one. All right, Carlos Pecanetti and colleague Fernando Jose Villegas. That name Villegas, I don't know. I feel like when it comes off my tongue, I have some like muscle memory in my tongue of saying it like that. Villegas.
Villegas? I don't think so. I think I would have made fun of you. I would remember making fun of you for saying it before.
So Carlos Pecanetti and colleague Fernando Jose Villegas were the subject of a car stop in September 1968 in the early hours of the morning in Mendoza, Argentina. Both men got out of the car to investigate the vehicle interference and found themselves paralyzed and unable to move. In front of them were three entities, short with large bald heads, tight-fitting overalls. Two more such creatures. Okay, hold on. Are overall, which were the ones like the...
Are those
coveralls or overalls?
Those are overalls, but I think people also call coveralls like the mechanics.
Well, see, that's what I think. But because they really should change the name of one of them, because coverall, it's like cover all your clothes, and then overall is like over all your clothes. So I'm like, well, which is which? Because I'm trying to paint a picture in my head here.
I don't think maybe...
Are these bald?
No, they're not redneck aliens or anything.
So they're mechanic aliens.
Yes.
Okay, mechanic aliens. So bald head and tight-fitting overalls. Two more such creatures stood slightly further away across the road next to a hovering UFO. The creatures came towards the witnesses as if walking on the air itself. The witnesses received an apparently telepathic communication, which basically stated that without the sun, the solar system would not exist. Wow!
Wow! What a revelation. Yes, thank you, bringers of cosmic knowledge. Without the sun, there would be no solar system.
You know what? I fucking stupid. And we're then told that mathematics is the universal language. I'm a fucking genius.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. The entities apparently scratched hieroglyphics all over the windows of the car. God, you know what? I'm pretty sure I read this one.
I'm pretty sure we did
read this. Goddamn X3. Because I'm like, yeah, wait a minute.
I remember the hieroglyphics on the windows. Yeah. And you're like, oh, nobody took pictures or something. And
Yeah. Stupid. That's what I get. We should have reset the thing.
Yeah, we didn't do that.
Ryan's going to be so mad at us.
We didn't read. I guess we did. That's what we get for throwing away the instructions.
Yeah, hold on. Mm. Let me fire another one out of there. A short one. All right, I got a short one here. A quick printout. Brian Jenkins. In April 1967, eight Coast Guards, including Brian Jenkins, reported a sighting through binoculars at Brixham in Devon of a cone-shaped UFO, which they described as shining brilliantly. Their description indicates they believed it was made of metal. No shit. No. It's shiny. it must have been made of metal. Good connection. There appeared to be some sort of hatch on the underside. Jenkins reported the sighting to the RAF Mountbatten. Royal Air Force Mountbatten, who in turn contacted the Ministry of Defense. The ministry offered the explanation that the object was something like the reflection of car headlights. The Coast Guard station commander, Harry Johnson.
Damn it. This is great. Just for that, this is the best.
This is Commander Harry Johnson. They're like, oh yeah, sure like, it
every,
is.
Yeah. Every time they get the call on the radio, this is Commander Harry Johnson. Yes, sir. Are you laughing, soldier? No. Yeah. No.
The Coast Guard station commander, Harry Johnson, seemed less than impressed with the Ministry of Defense's efforts, referring to their debunking attempts as silly. Well, yeah, it's because you called. Your name's Harry Johnson. You're like, my name's Harry Johnson, and I would like to report a UFO. There's no wonder they didn't believe
it. Number one, you're going to say your name is Harry Johnson. They're already not going to take you seriously. Then you say UFO in the same sentence, and then they're like, nope, totally out, gone.
So yeah, like we said before, the dead weight's gone, as you can tell, complete streamlined. thank God. All right. So, today we're going to talk a little bit about, UFO disappearances.
Yes, indeedy.
So basically these are a couple case files. As soon as you hear Braden and Dan, you know, Braden and Dan only, you know, things are streamlined. You know, we're getting right to the point. So we're going to talk about a couple brief cases where I think there's a couple that people that I've read here that people attribute. They're like, well, maybe it's UFOs. But this one, do we want to talk about this one first?
Yeah, let's talk about the first one we're going to talk about is the disappearance of one Frederick Valentich. And this case is actually pretty well known. If you're Australian, if you're from down under, you've probably heard of this one. It's one of the more famous ones. Give you a quick rundown. It was on October 21st of 1978. A 20-year-old Mr. Frederick Valentich rented a single-engine plane at a Moorabbin airport with the plans of heading to King Island in Tasmania. And what he said was to catch some seafood. But there are kind of conflicting reports as the reason why he was visiting. He told some other people later that he was going to visit friends. So that's kind of a...
Well, you could do both.
I guess, yeah. You could catch seafood with friends.
Yeah.
You could catch friends with seafood.
Well, you always catch friends with seafood. So I it's funny. I didn't know that he rented the airplane.
No.
I had heard, like, I had known he had about 150 total hours of flying time and held a class 4 instrument rating,
right.
which essentially authorizes him to fly at night as well, but only in, what does it say here? Visual meteorological conditions. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, he was trained to become a commercial airline pilot, but I don't think his scores were high enough for him to be considered actual employment as an airport. So he kind of has a little bit of a checkered history, I'd say.
So yeah, like so he applied twice to enlist in the Royal Australian Air Force, but was rejected because of inadequate educational qualifications. From all accounts, he really wanted to have a career in aviation. And he was studying at the time part-time to become a commercial pilot, but he had a poor achievement record, twice failed all 5 commercial license examination subjects. So it's fair to say, like, I'm not going to say he's dumb. I'm just going to say maybe he's not the best at taking tests.
Maybe he's a bad test taker.
A bad test taker.
You know?
You know what? First off, I didn't know it was a thing you could rent a plane. Is there you know, like budget car and truck rentals? There's budget car.
Yeah, like you go to like, I think you go to those private airfields, like you can rent planes. Cause I think movie stars do. I think like Harrison Ford does it. I don't think he has his own plane that he flies all over the place. Sometimes he wants to go flying, just rents a plane. He doesn't buy one every time he wants to fly.
No. Harrison Ford 100% owns his own plane.
That guy's at every single airport.
Probably. He probably what? Just buys one. He's like, yeah, I'll buy one. So he had been involved in some incidents while flying. He strayed one incident into a control zone in Sydney. He just received a warning, and he twice deliberately flew into a cloud, for which he was almost prosecuted for. I didn't know you couldn't fly into clouds.
I didn't know that either. Of course, I'm not all up to snuff on my aviation law, but I didn't know you can.
Because to be honest, you know what? Like, if I was in a plane, I'd be like, look at the cloud. I'm going to fly right through it.
Yeah. Why wouldn't you? I guess.
Yeah. Maybe because the air density. I don't know. There's got to be something for it. But, like, most importantly, Valentich was a believer. He loved UFOs. And he had told his dad and stuff that it was a legit worry of his of one day being attacked by them.
That's something to worry. I mean, that's something you could worry about back then.
I don't know if I'm telling my dad that. You know what I mean?
That's something that's important to him. So you gotta tell him.
So Dan, why are we talking about Valentich here?
Okay, well, Valentich, on his 127-mile scheduled flight, he actually advised Melbourne Air Traffic Control that he was being accompanied or followed by an aircraft that was about 1,000 feet above him. The way he described this thing was very unusual. It had unusual features. It didn't look like something he had seen before, at least. He pretty much reported that it was hovering, and it's not an aircraft. Like, I mean, he had been in the air enough. He had enough hours that if he had seen something like this, he'd probably be able to accurately report what it is. But even air traffic control had no idea what that was, and they had no record of a flight flying all around there. Now, the interesting thing is that this area that he was flying over, known as the Bass Strait, is actually somewhat known as kind of Australia's Bermuda Triangle, which I didn't know until I started researching this, that this area has a history of strange disappearances. They had in 1920, like the first recorded disappearance was a military air code DH, a 9A went down, and while searching for a missing ship. They've had in 1934, the Miss Hobart airliner went missing on a flight from Launceston to Melbourne, and that was carrying 9 passengers and 2 pilots, never heard from again after they took out a flight. And I think the one before the Valentich disappearance was the disappearance of a Miss Brenda Heen in 1972, and that took off from Canberra and in a 1930s Tiger Moth, and then after that, her and the pilot never seen again. So this place definitely has. I mean, if you look out on the map, it's the body of water that's in between Australia and Tasmania.
Yeah, so it's not that far.
Yeah. So.
And it has a history of.
Strange disappearances.
Strange disappearance. As soon as you say like Australia's Bermuda Triangle, I'm like, well, that's interesting. So he's flying to Tasmania to get friends with seafood.
Right.
Radio's traffic tours. Something's are flying around him. He sees. They have no idea what happens next.
Right. But they do have the transcript. Between Valentich and Roby. Who's this Roby? He was the one who was in the air traffic control.
Roby, I like to think that's how they say Robbie in Australian. What? Roby? No?
No, I don't think that's...
Okay.
I don't think that's it.
Well, Dan, what
else... Steve Roby, I'm sorry. It's Flight Service Officer Steve Roby, who is at...
I like to think of it as Robbie, and okay. They just say, Robbie. So anyways, Dan, why don't we read this transcript? For this transcript, dramatic reading.
This is the alien theorist theorizing first. This is Brayden and Dan bringing you a dramatic reading of the radio communication during the Valentich disappearance. And forewarning, we're going to do Australian accent, so... You Aussies get mad at us.
Well, I'm going to do a traffic controller accent. Dan's going to do the
Australian. I'll do my best Australian accent. Please don't hold it against me. We're trying to be as accurate as possible.
so now, buckle up and enjoy ATT's first ever dramatic reading. This is The Disappearance
of Frederick Valentich.
That guy.
That dude. That bloke. Oh, it's Australian now.
Today, Frederick Valentich will be played by your favorite theorist, Dan, and radio control operator Steve Roby will be played by Brayden.
Okay. Here we go. There's some wonderful Foley work.
Is there... any known traffic below 5,000 feet?
No known traffic.
I am... seems to be a large aircraft below 5,000.
What type of aircraft is it?
I cannot affirm. It's full bright. Seems to me like landing lights. The aircraft has passed just... over me at least 1,000 feet above.
Roger, and it is a large aircraft, confirm?
Unknown due to the speed it's traveling. Is there any Air Force aircraft in the vicinity?
No known aircraft in the vicinity.
Yeah, it's approaching me right now. Due east towards me. It seems to me he's playing some sort of game. He's flying over me at 2-3 times at a time speeds I could not identify.
Roger, what is your actual level?
My level is 4,500, 4500.
And confirm you cannot identify the aircraft?
Affirmative.
Roger, stand by.
It's not an aircraft, it's...
Can you describe the aircraft?
As it's flying past, it's a long shape. Cannot identify more than that it has such speed. It is before me right now, Melbourne.
And how large would this object be?
It seems it's stationary. What I'm doing right now is orbiting. And the thing is just orbiting on top of me also. It's got a green light. It's sort of metallic. Like it's all shiny on the outside. It's just vanished. Would you know what kind of aircraft I've got? Is it military aircraft?
Confirm, aircraft just vanished.
Say again.
Is the aircraft still with you?
It's, now approaching from the southwest. The engine is rough idling. I've got it set at 23-24, and the thing is... coughing.
Roger, what are your intentions?
My intentions are to go to King Island, Melbourne. That strange aircraft is hovering on top of me again. It is hovering, and it's not an aircraft.
This was the final communication from Frederick Valentich. After this, they said they had about 17 seconds of silence. Open microphone, and then followed by some sort of unidentified staccato noise. Some people say it sounded like metal or something. That's what
like,
I got.
Like grinding metal, which is, which is like, I mean, all accounts, like a lot of, you know, a lot of people say that when seeing, UFOs, it's actually really haunting to read this transcript. The parts where he says like, it's not an aircraft. I wonder if we can actually find the real, I wonder if
I tried to. I've only been able to find some like reenactments of it. Like, I mean, better than ours, but maybe not. Okay, maybe not better than ours. Comparable to ours. But I don't know if it's the actual audio. I think they've only played it on the news when it actually happened. Might be some sort of Australian archive somewhere and be able to find it.
So basically, after he goes radio silence, Mr. Valentich is never seen again.
Never seen again. Then the plane isn't even fully recovered, or they never even found. I mean, they said that they found, I think, just... they said like a month after the appearance, a pilot of another Cessna said that he sighted the outline of what he believed to be a submerged aircraft. But he said he made another pass over, but he was unable to confirm the observation. Some people who kind of took it upon themselves to look up the official case file said they got new information, and they said that new parts of an aircraft wreckage were found in Bass Strait about 5 years later after the disappearance with partial matching serial numbers. Partial, so not full.
So basically right after, search and air was undertaken. They had ocean-going ship traffic.
20 minutes later, they had guys out there.
Lockheed P-3 Orion aircrafts plus 8 civilian aircrafts. The search encompassed 1,000 square miles, and they found zilch. Nothing. Nada. Search efforts officially deceased October 25th, 1978. So the crash happened October 21st, 1978. Frederick Valentich has been officially missing for 39 years. Yeah, 39 years. So basically he's presumed dead now. The Department of Transportation investigated into Valentich, and they were unable to determine a cause, but they presumed whatever happened, it was fatal for Valentich. And yeah, they found an engine cowl flap, that washed ashore on Flinders Island. I don't know exactly where that is in like comparison. That's like across the, it's like if King Island's on the left side of the strait there, Flinders Island's on the exact opposite side of where King Island would be in regards to Tasmania. So it's not like preposterous that stuff from a crash would, you know, make its way there.
Yeah, these kinds of places, definitely wreckage over the ocean or any open water is going to be difficult to find, because I mean, it with currents, with ocean currents and like weather conditions can change so fast, it's hard to say if you know, if he did crash in the water, it would be extremely difficult to find him, because even if he got out there like an hour later, it could be that wreckage could be swept away miles from where it started or miles where he went down. If he did get taken by a hole. See, you know, it's like, I don't know let me ask your opinion, Brayden. Would you think that aliens would be more likely to abduct the whole airplane or just take the guy or just destroy the airplane?
I think if they're coming and they're flying around a plane, like they're taking it to see what we're making. Like, just because they fly these unbelievably high tech crafts, they might look at our primitive technology and be like, how the fuck is that thing working? Like, how do they have this thing in the air right now? We don't get it. We don't understand. Right? They're like, maybe they're doing scans of a ship and they're like, you know what? Like, it doesn't even have a quantum drive. Like, how is this in the air? Like, we are so primitive that we're almost like a, it's like when you see like your friend doing something so stupid, so unbelievably stupid, but you're like, and it works out for them. And you're like, I can't believe that worked. That's kind of what I imagine that we're doing.
Yeah.
When aliens see us.
I guess, yeah, you could see it that way. Because it could be a question of whether... I think we tend to characterize like the progress of technology in terms of how we did it, like from, you know, Bronze Age to Iron Age to like Industrial Revolution, where maybe on a different planet where they have a different resources or a different type of evolution of their brains, even they could have skipped a whole stage, or perhaps their propulsion they didn't use fossil fuel. You know, maybe they didn't have fossils, so maybe they don't have fossil fuel propulsion. You know, so maybe so I would that could work.
So in that sense, like they're looking at the ship, they're flying around it, right? They're shining down it. What is it? Like, and they're like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's just take it. Let's take the whole thing.
Mm.
And so they take the whole thing for study, right? They're gonna reverse engineer it, figure out how we're doing it.
Yeah, and also kind of the thing about this disappearance is, it, you know, Valentich in the transcript, he keeps asking if it's a military aircraft. Some people have said that perhaps like he saw a military aircraft and maybe he wasn't supposed to see that aircraft, so he was in the end, you know, eliminated. Maybe he saw some sort of markings on it or something like that he could identify it, but he just had never seen an aircraft like it before. I mean, I don't think it really goes beyond logic or rational thought to be like, okay, if an experimental, perhaps military aircraft was flying around that area and happened to be seen by, you know, this tiny Cessna, I mean, this would be the time if they were like, well, let's just down them and just, that'll be the end of it. You know,
so there was like, I want to get, before we kind of get too deep in the UFO thing, it was proposed that Valentich staged his own disappearance. But right away, like if you read it, like they plotted him on radar the whole time, right up until it goes dark. So that means that, I mean, technically it doesn't mean he crashed right then and there. But he would then have to know where to fly, like to avoid radar. And from
you could fly it if you flew at a certain low altitude, you could avoid radar. But
yeah, and then but not pop up and stuff, and not get seen. And it was pretty well reported that he's a pretty simple guy, so they didn't think. They don't think that. Plus,
yeah, staging your death is really complicated.
Yeah,
I mean, and you got to get a whole new identity. I mean, I don't know how hard that is in Australia. I mean, you're all criminals down there. I'm joking, but maybe you are.
the Cessna that he took at the time, like he went missing, would have had enough fuel to fly 800 kilometers.
Right, so he only would be able to fly 800 kilometers?
So it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like, with that, you're either going back to Australia or you're going back to, you know, you're continuing on to...
Yeah, I think, yeah, he is, the flight that he had planned from Melbourne, I guess, his total flight path is going to be about 235 kilometers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, if you're out there, are you going to turn around? Where are you going to fly? And you don't have any record of him landing anywhere. Like, where's he going to, I guess, I don't know. Are private airfields? Do people have just like private airfields sitting around in Australia? I don't think so. Like,
well, then you'd have to plan, you'd have to know about them. You know what I mean? And then if it is, it's not like private airfields. They're just like, they just sit there unmonitored. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying. So,
there was reports of like a plane landing somewhere. But police investigated and were like, well, if it landed, it's gone. So that kind of went nowhere. There's reports that he committed suicide. However, talking with his colleagues and everyone that knew him basically eliminated that possibility. Everyone said he was super nice guy, really positive. But I mean, I mean, guess most that's a slim chance, other than the fact that like, it's kind of a weird one. If you're going to commit suicide, you're like, I'm going to go out with this, like, I'm going to like be totally calm and make up this whole story with UFOs and stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
From reports of people who actually heard the actual transcript, like they said you could detect genuine stress and anxiety in his voice from what he was seeing. Like he couldn't identify what this is. I mean, I putting yourself in his shoes or any pilot's shoes where you have this aircraft that appears to be hovering above you and doing all these things that aren't, you know, that aren't normal or and beyond your understanding. You're just flying in the air, and it's just it would trip me out. Like, I can't imagine anybody being really calm at that point. Yeah.
No, and another one was that he had somehow got disoriented and he was flying upside down, and what he thought he saw would have been his own aircraft lights reflected in the water.
That's crazy.
And so
I cannot. How do you get mixed up flying upside down? Because stuff's like hanging upside down.
Right away they were like, oh, he's inexperienced, and it was the illusion of a tilted horizon. And basically that is because human senses are adapted for use on the ground, navigating by sensory input alone during a flight can be dangerous. Sensory input does not always accurately reflect movement of the aircraft, causing sensory illusions.
Completely upside down. Like,
well, some people say that he wasn't maybe completely upside down. He had put himself in some sort of what they call a graveyard spiral. So it's a dive when a pilot doesn't know his instruments enough. But the thing that doesn't make sense about that is like, if you don't know your instruments enough, like, you will be like, your instruments will, like, you're going in a spin, going down and stuff. You know, you'll have like your is it altimeter? Altimeter, bunch of other stuff. They'll all be doing weird stuff. Like, he would have said, like, all my gauges are going wild or something. You know what I mean? Like,
and he was checking his altitude in the transcript. Like, he was checking the air traffic control is like, Roger, what's your actual level? And he's like, my level is 4,500.
He's not like, oh God, it's going down.
Yeah, it's like he's definitely checking it, and he's like, so it's not like I'm.
Yeah, so like U.S. Air Force pilot James Magana and author Joe Nichols are the ones that proposed that he did this graveyard spiral. But I was like, they don't really take an account for, they don't really take an account like him reading the like his altitude and stuff. And then James McGann and Joe Nichols say that the lights that he was seeing were most likely the planets Venus, Mercury, and Mars, along with the bright star Antares,
Antares.
Antares? Antares? Oh, fuck, man. I'm terrible readers. Antares, and they would have behaved in a consistent way of, and I'm like, he was like, it's hovering above me. They're in front of me. They're below me. How is he flying? He's doing spins and flips and shit.
People pull this shit all the time. They're like, oh, it was Venus and high, whatever. You know what? Somebody needs to take me out and show me this shit that you could be like, Venus looks like a UFO that's like orbiting my plane. Like it's doing shit in the air, like crazy shit in the air. Please, someone take me out and show me this, because I don't know how you wouldn't be able to look at a star and be like, that's a star.
I'm like, there is no fucking way. Okay, I sit in a giant 747. I've flown across continents. I sit in there, close my eyes.
Well, you're flying across continents. You just
and that plane, I'm just saying, like, you know, the planes normally fly kind of straight. That plane starts to bank, even the slightest. I know.
Yeah.
I know it bangs. So you're telling me this guy was doing spins and pointing and like didn't feel the gravity and like just like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And you're sitting in a little Cessna, you could definitely feel everything. Like, there is.
Oh, dude, I've flown them. If the air's rough, like it sways the whole back, I've flown in them. It throws the whole back end. They're crazy. Like, I've been in one. I flew to this small community in the middle of British Columbia. You can only get to it by like, it's like a dirt runway. And I'm telling you right now, if the pilot flying that little thing would have just started a nosedive, I would have fucking known.
Yeah. And and also the weird thing is in the transcript, he mentions about like how his engine like starts to act up. And that's kind of a common thing with, you know, some UFO encounters, especially with cars and stuff like this, where they're affecting the engines in cars and ending them, you know, stopping them or causing them to kind of misfire or whatever. That's something that doesn't like normally happen.
So with this one, this one's easy for me to jump on the UFO bandwagon with this one. Unless you can take me out and put me in one of these graveyard spirals and I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. We're not going to die. And the pilot's like, yeah, we're about to die. That's Venus, Mars, and Mercury. And that's the ocean coming at us. Like, I'm like, oh, what? I thought we were fine. Like,
I thought we were perfectly fine, but we're actually going to die.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and he had 150 hours flying. He flew enough that they let him rent a plane. Do you know what I mean? Like, to tell me then you're like, oh, well, it was because of his inexperience. I'm like, well, why the fuck are you renting people planes? You know what I mean? Like, what's the cutoff for planes?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If he couldn't read his dials, how is he renting that plane? Like, I don't believe that for a second.
That's
the story. Now, he was a huge believer in UFOs. And some people say that he faked his disappearance and because of that and staged all this. But I'm like, that doesn't make sense either, because he didn't have enough fuel to go anywhere of substance. He would have still been on Australia or in Tasmania or King Island or the other island there.
Yeah, somebody would have recognized him. Like, somebody would have, it would have came out by now. You can't just go missing for 39 years and just like nobody ever finds out about you. Like,
yeah.
Doesn't happen.
You know, like people like us speculate the extraterrestrials either destroyed Valentich's aircraft or abducted him. But I don't know why everyone has to always say, oh, they got rid of the aircraft. They destroyed it. They obliterated it. I'm like, why wouldn't they just take the whole craft with him in it? Maybe they didn't.
I don't know if it was that big, though. I don't know if the aircraft was that big. But I mean, he could have, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it was bigger than him.
Yeah.
Because what did he say? At one point he says, let me scroll back through the... Oh, I closed it. I thought one time, does he say, is there any military like freighters or military...
No, he just says like military aircraft.
I thought he said something about it being bigger. But anyways, like, why not? Or like, you know what I mean? Like, who's to say they can't break it down? Or I just don't think they just destroy it. I think they took everything. Maybe they didn't even know he was in it.
Right? Could be. They just took it. I mean, they thought it was an animal.
the day that this happened, so October 21st, 1978, there were reports. There were some individuals reporting seeing erratically moving green lights in the sky, kind of around the area off of Tasmania. There was also a plumber by the name of Roy Manifold, and he claims that photos that he took that day show a fast moving object exiting the water near the Cape Otway Lighthouse in southern Victoria. So that's not too far off.
No. And that's, I think Australia is a really, I mean, number one, it's a really big,
really big
subcontinent, and it is chock full of UFO hotspots. Like, there are a lot of UFO sightings in Australia, and a lot of them get discounted, but there could be tons of probably I mean, I wouldn't discount like USO bases, underwater, or was it unidentified submerged objects? Could happen.
So
going in and out of water.
So not only Roy, but Roy Manifold or whatever his name is. There was another. The same day, a Victoria farmer had reported seeing what he claimed to be a 30-meter aircraft hovering over his farm the morning after Valentich went missing.
That's crazy.
Right? So we're not saying, like, this is an area of where people see weird shit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have this guy who's been missing 40 years with not even, I mean, and like we've gone over this with the missing Malaysian flight, like shit that hits the bottom of the ocean could be anywhere.
Yep.
You get some of those streams, but like nothing, like all you have is this guy. If he's crashing, you know what I mean? Like it's a hard one for me because I'm like, you read that transcript of him talking. It doesn't, like, if he was spinning, like, that just doesn't make sense to me. Like, it makes the most sense to me that he saw some fucked up shit that day. Like, whatever he saw either took him or ended his life that day.
Yeah, I mean, even if it did, if we say it destroyed his aircraft, could have done that, left no trace. I mean, you don't really know what kind of weapons or weaponry the extraterrestrials have, but I assume it's some sort of energy-based weapon, and it would just, like, shoo, I could take it out. Why they would do that? No clue, but, you know, it's...
Well, you know
that,
what?
That's something that could be...
You
would find no real wreckage, and they only have the partial match. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, not enough to... Because for me, because I'm like, you find a partial match in the ocean of where something went down, it must not be even close because, you know what I mean? It must have been like, oh, we have this thing. It's got two numbers on it. And those two numbers were also on this one. And they're like, oh, so is it a match? They're like, well, it's two numbers of like, you know,
yeah, 80, it's a partial match.
Of 80 numbers.
Yeah. And if as many stuff goes down in that Bass Strait as, you know, as they say, as enough for it to be labeled Australia's Bermuda Triangle, like it could be anything.
Yeah, maybe that's maybe on the next case file we'll do it. It's called the Bass Strait Triangle.
Yeah.
But it's definitely
that was fun to look into. I didn't know about that. I kind of knew about the Valentich case, but the Bermuda Triangle thing is definitely something I want to get into. That should be fun.
But anyways, Frederick Valentich still missing to this day. Still no one says. The leading theory for me is abduction. That's what I think. What do you think, Dan? You think he hit the water or you think he's gone?
I think he's gone. I'd go with abduction too. I'd get on that train.
Maybe we can find some videos. And if you're a pilot, if anyone here's a pilot or anything, and you've been in these graveyard spirals, or you can attest to, you know, flying your plane in like these dangerous spirals that would make Venus, Mars, and Mercury look like aliens zipping all around your aircraft and you not notice, please let us know, because to me that sounds preposterous. I don't believe it for a second.
Yeah, and if any of you have actually like looked and seen a star doing something weird in the sky and someone pointed out to you and said, oh, that's just Venus, please tell us, because that's ridiculous. I can't, no way.
I see, like, Venus all the time and I've never once been like, look at that, is that hovering
that's
around?
That's a UFO.
It's like, zipping around.
Yeah, no. I didn't know.
Well, we're almost up at, maybe we should save some of the other ones I have, because we've almost burned an hour and that's what we said we were going to make this one. So, anyways, look up Frederick Valentich, hashtag look it up for yourself. Discuss it with us on Facebook. If you got any information about this case that we didn't cover, let us know, because we're going to start, we're getting to a point where we might have to start revisiting old cases that we didn't touch on.
This one definitely took me down the Australia UFO rabbit hole. So any of our Aussie listeners who haven't stopped listening after our terrible Australian accents, if you want to tell us about some hotspots or some encounters that you've had down under, we'd love to hear of them. We'd love to hear about them. Or I'd love to hear about them. I think there's a lot of crazy stuff in there. There's a lot of Australia is just a weird continent. It's just like most of it's unexplored. Like I really want to get into that.
yeah,
that stuff. It's like, it's a huge desert, but you know, it's in the inside and some of it hasn't even been explored. There's actually, it's kind of off topic, but there's actually a great H.P. Lovecraft story called The Shadow Out of Time that takes place in Australia. It's really cool. If you want to read it, it's cool. I recommend that.
Well, I'll give it
anyways.
Let's get into some reviews. I have one new review. This review is from, This Is the End from the US of A. This is a 5-star review, ATT. These guys are hilarious. Always excited when a new podcast pops up. Only downside is they don't put out enough content, but you can't win them all. Well, if you're like, This Is the End from USA and you don't think we put out enough content, get on our Patreon and there's some bonus stuff. You get after hours. We do some, some other fun stuff like the 1-star reviewer. We play some live Dungeons and Dragons. We're going to be doing more stuff.
We're gearing up right now.
So summer's over and we told you guys at the beginning, summer's a hard time for us to do podcasts. Summer's almost over and we've made plans. So if you like our show, like what we do, and you want us to do more, subscribe to our Patreon, Alien Theorist Theorizing, because we are going to be putting out more material, more podcasts, and more podcasts that will hit our Patreon before they hit iTunes. What else do we got here, Dan?
Do we got our Prolapser of the Week?
Yeah, let's do Zell's Prolapser of the Week. Well, Zell's Prolapser of the Week is definitely going to be Louis Caraves. I don't know. To be honest, Caraves. I don't care how you say his name. This guy's a dick. Anyways, Louis wrote in yesterday, had all the theorists laughing. It made some good banter on our text messages to each other. And
he told the hard truths.
He told the hard truths, cut deep. Anyways, this was Lewis's comment yesterday. Love the show, but holy shit, Braden is so annoying. Case File 33 might be the one that ends me listening. Super annoying, always yelling.
What was Case File?
I think that's Moon Landing. I was meat draw drunk.
You're meat draw drunk there? Okay, that makes sense.
Super annoying, always yelling, and his mic sounds like garbage. He loves listening to himself.
That was back when you had a shitty mic. So,
I did have a shitty mic.
We've evolved. We've gotten better.
And you know what? I've explained this. I listened to that podcast because after we did it, I got a lot of messages. Even Ryan was like, oh, dude, that was a little much, that one. What had happened is I couldn't hear half the podcast. The computer and the mic phone I was using at the time, one, super drunk. I will admit that right now. Very intoxicated from the Mitra at the Legion. 100%. Didn't set my gear up properly. My headphone jack wasn't plugged in all the way. So what was happening is as I was moving and wiggling the cord, it was like cutting in and out. So every now and then I would think we were having these really long silences. When really everyone was talking, I just couldn't hear them. So then I would start, because as soon as you like, if you ever try to do a podcast and you're talking with your friend and you both stop talking for a second and you know you're recording it, it's instantly like you instantly know when there's dead air. And so you want to fill it really quick, or else Ryan gets really mad when he has to edit out all the dead air. So drunk me. And you know what? I like to talk. I don't like listening to myself.
He's a chatterbox. It's okay.
When I listen back to my own voice, I go, oh, is that my voice? I was trying to fill dead air, but drunk me being loud. Anyways, Louis, thanks for your not even constructive criticism. Just thanks for your deeply emotional.
Thanks for your criticism. Keep listening. We get better.
Devastatingly painful,
hilarious
personal attack on myself. Anyways, so thanks for that, Louis. You dick. and to all of you out there that think you can now just start harping me on Facebook to get a shout out.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Please don't just think that you can just keep ripping on Brayden.
This was a one-time thing.
He's
Guess what?
Sensitive boy.
Next week I'm going to start Brayden's prolapse of the week, and it's going to be the people who, you know, compliment me the nicest. Anyways, what else we got, Dan? You got anything else we want to say before we wrap this one up?
I don't think so. Anybody, if we missed any of your questions on any of the topics or anything, if you guys got questions, send them in. We'll try to answer them as best we can.
And this is, I've told this to other friends before who always say that, oh, you should get someone doing your social media. We like that when you guys ask us stuff on social media, you're getting us. It's not someone else.
It's one of us.
I will say most of the time it's Zell. Some of the time it's me or Dan. And maybe 1% of the time it's Andrew.
You know, if it's a really smart question, it's usually Dan.
Yeah, it's usually
Dan. I'll answer it.
But if we don't answer right away, send it to us again. People always apologize, say, oh, I didn't want to be annoying. You're not being annoying. Nope. We definitely like it. We just get a lot. So sometimes if it kind of gets jumbled in the, you know, in the machine and goes down the list, it's too hard to go back. So just resend the questions. It doesn't annoy us. It doesn't bug us at all. We really enjoy it. We try to make this
interactive.
Yeah. Like we,
community. As we can do it.
It's all our podcast.
Yeah. All us, all the time.
All us. Anyways, okay. Let's wrap this one up. As I like to always say, live long and good day, mates. This is for the Australia listeners down south. Keep those eyes on the skies, guys.